When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And what is up? Welcome in another episode of DC Live. I'm Wes Mitchell. We're going to be joined shortly by my co-host, Chris Clark. And you see him right there, our very special guest today. It is Clark Brooks, a.k.a. SEC StatCat. Find him on Twitter, SEC underscore StatCat. Clark, first of all, appreciate you being here, man. Appreciate you making the time. I think it's been, I don't know, man, maybe a year. I think we talked to you last season as well. How you doing, man? You ready for Thanksgiving?
I am ready for Thanksgiving, getting really excited with the transfer portal ramping up. It's going to be a big focus for our On3 family the next month or so. But yeah, we still got a couple games left here to get us through the end of the year here.
Yeah, we do. Transfer portal, as you know, it's going to be a wild sort of little I think it's all going to be crammed into a few weeks once that thing opens up on December 5th. And going to certainly be something we'll be tracking on Gamecock Central as well and throughout the On3 family of sites there, because the transfer portal giveth and it taketh away. So going to be very interesting to follow that. But Clark, I know you've been, I would say, tracking and I don't even know the words for everything you do. It's like, honestly, nobody, if y'all haven't been to SEC StatCat, y'all go check it out. Nobody breaks down the individual games and offenses deeper than Clark does. So we had to have you on this week after South Carolina's performance against Tennessee. And I got to lead you off right there. As many games as you have sort of charted, have you ever seen a wider gap between what South Carolina did at Florida last week and what they did to Tennessee this past week?
I'll be honest, very few instances come to mind. I mean, we're talking about going from a 22% broken play rate to an 8% broken play rate. We're going from an inept success rate in the low 30s to something around 50%, where almost half the plays worked. We're seeing downfield aggression. We're seeing a little bit of a shift in schematics. So as I'm sure a lot of South Carolina fans can attest, you know, they're really, I would say, fed up or frustrated with the conservative perception of the offense, and that's kind of tied into RPO bubble screens. Spencer Rattler, he does lean on those an awful lot. But as we saw against Tennessee, we saw a little bit more downfield aggression. We wanted to test that back end a little bit more downfield throws. And the results, of course, speak for themselves, putting up a 60 burger against one of the hottest teams in the country.
Yeah, so Clark, I think something a lot of fans have been asking and something I think you are probably most well-equipped to answer is how different were the actual plays that were called? Was this more that South Carolina was doing things differently in terms of actual play design and what they called, or was it just more so the approach in terms of, like you said, maybe throwing the ball down the field a little bit more, throwing on first down, just sort of, it seemed like there was certainly a different rhythm. There was less looking to the sideline. It was let's get to the line. Let's call the play. Let's go play. And I think Spencer Rattler certainly seemed to feed off of that. You could feel the confidence going up. From my perspective, was a lot better in the pocket, just navigating and knowing when to keep his eyes downfield, knowing when to eject. But what did you see from the actual literal plays that were called in this game compared to the rest of the season?
Well, the dropback staples were the dropback staples. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can see over my shoulder here. Mesh dagger is a look you guys have been running all season long. It is a I wouldn't say a popular play call, but it's definitely a look that you will see in multiple offenses, especially Lincoln Riley's. Now, the empty formation, which generated two long explosive completions with that dig over the middle, that is definitely a Lincoln Riley play. That is a play I saw when charting Spencer Rattler, when charting Jalen Hurts and all these other prolific quarterbacks in that scheme. So it is nothing really new. The Yankee shot stuff, so that's basically a deep cross with the overtop post. That is very much a part of the Satterfield wave attack. Same with isolated fades on the outside, whether you're getting a personnel, 12 personnel, you know, get that mod ball, get a lot of bodies inside, and then isolate your guy on the outside on a one-on-one matchup. That's just stuff they do. The difference is, yes, they hit on him. Spencer Rattler, he was not necessarily looking to check down. He did keep his eyes downfield, like you said. And of course, it all stems from having the confidence to do it, because I was as high as anyone in the country when he signed with South Carolina in the transfer portal last season. He has arm talent that just guys just cannot do. I mean, even in week one, when he kind of had a lackluster performance, he had one throw along the right sideline that you just cannot teach. And so, you know, he has it in him. And it has a lot of people like me who may be eating a little bit of their bad takes because of his lackluster play. You just can't ignore him. And when he hit on that deep post, a double post wheel pattern, a switch, which I just love, and ironically, a pattern that Tennessee has just embarrassed most people with this season. It's a great way to get on the board with the second touchdown, a big pass, and of course, after that, the confidence just kept growing, and he was not necessarily putting the ball into harm's way, which has also been the caveat to Spencer Rattler. Of course, I tweeted out during the game, entering this weekend, Spencer Rattler had the third best accuracy percentage on passes beyond 10 yards downfield. But again, if you're just only dinking and dunking all the time, that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle. Of course, he was on point against against Volunteers.
Yeah, so Clark, it also felt like to me that South Carolina was a little more willing, and I don't know if this was more of just Spencer, where he went with the football, if this was more by design from the sideline. It felt like, especially in the second half, they were more willing to take some of those easy access throws as well. When Tennessee was playing off coverage, Juice Wells runs out, turns around, easy 5-yard completion. There was a beautifully thrown little quick out to the tight end on like the first third down of the game. It has felt like, again, I don't have the charting to back it up, so I want you to tell me if this is just, am I reading this right or not? It has felt like a lot of South Carolina's offense this year has been either behind the line of scrimmage or down the field, long developing plays, not so much just those easy access throws that fall somewhere in the middle of that. It felt like those were there. It felt like they hit those and kind of stayed a little bit better on schedule against Tennessee. Is that just my bias or my feeling, or does your charting back that up to an extent?
Well, I just think Rattler was a little bit more decisive. Mm-hmm. He knew Tennessee's front four was pretty good, and casual fans can pretty much attest South Carolina's offensive line is not one of the strongest in the conference. So some of the gun shyness, not really trusting the entire thing, sometimes it does stem with the offensive line, because if he knows, okay, if my first read's not there, I'm gonna have to drop my eyes and make something happen. It's just not an overall effective approach. But when he has the confidence in the whole scheme, the whole approach, he's able to get the ball out, like you said, with that pattern. Actually, I should say that cross pattern, cross swap pattern, I did share the design on Twitter this week with another of their most repped pass patterns, or I should say most effective pass patterns. But that is something I did not see from South Carolina. So basically, you know, cross, it's a weak side flood. Well, you're bringing your intermediate cross, and you're bringing a dig in behind. But what South Carolina did, they had a drag come underneath. So it was a little bit more like a shallow concept, kind of a mix mashed of ideas. But that quick out, yeah, that's just the check down of that read. Mm-hmm. If you perceive that the defense is going to over pursue those in breakers or play a little bit more concentration towards the middle of the field, that's the play to make. And of course, he puts the ball right where it has to be on the outside shoulder. You know, if that was on the inside hip, that could have been intercepted. That could have been a pick six. So yes, Spencer has had some inconsistencies with his lower bodies, but for whatever reason, everything just clicked with his confidence and with his ball placement, knowing where to go with the ball.
Now, I know, obviously, you, for the most part, are focusing on offense on your site. Again, by the way, y'all check it out, secstatcat.com. But as you charted Tennessee, what did you see, if anything, that you noticed from Carolina's defense? Like, obviously, this wasn't a shutdown performance from them, but I felt like they did enough as far as limiting the explosive plays. I think Beamer said Hooker was maybe 1 for 9 on deep balls in this game, and just didn't connect on some of the explosive plays that they have. I thought South Carolina tackled well. Like, you know, Tennessee's going to get their yardage, but Carolina was able to sort of make them chunk down the field as opposed to having as many big gains as it feels like Tennessee normally has. So what was your view on that from that perspective?
You definitely hit on it. It was preventing big plays. It was allowing cushion and banking on your guys to tackle in space. Of course, Hendon Hooker, one of the more explosive passers in all of college football. His explosive pass rate against the Cox was 2.4%. Basically, two explosive plays all game. And one of them was basically in garbage time on that cross over the middle for the touchdown. But yeah, by my charting, he was, one of eight deep. So that's one big aspect to take it away. You're playing lockdown coverage. You're on the same page because, like I mentioned with South Carolina kind of stealing the wheel switch, that has been a prolific element to Tennessee's attack. You just think of the Kentucky game. All three wheelie switches went for long completions. Well, they were one of three on true wheelie switches. If they did curls and they just hooked up, because you know you're giving space, and a lot of what Tennessee does is vertical choice. If you're given space, you're going to curl up the space. If they're playing tight, you know, if you're even, we're leaving type of idea. So, they just had no opportunities to connect on any of those big things. And if you're just playing back, you're going to have to make them nickel and dime and have 10, 12, 13 play series without a lot of mistakes. It's really tough to do. So, and again, the other side of the coin is tackling well. South Carolina, not really usually a good tackling team this year. In SEC play alone, they were bottom four in yards after the catch average, as well as yards after contact for runs. Now, Tennessee, by themselves, not necessarily the most dangerous team after the catch, but South Carolina held them to 2 yards below their yards after the catch average. Now, what does that do to the common fan? Not much, really, but if you're thinking of taking a 2nd and 8 to a 2nd and 6, or, a 1st and 10 into a, 2nd and 5, where they're a little bit more ahead of the chains, where the whole playbook is open, and where play action is devastating, because let's not kid ourselves, Hendon Hooker loves himself some play action. He really wants to get those safeties in so he can really maximize those vertical choice on those one-on-one matchups. 41% of his plays, or I should say pass attempts, against South Carolina used play action. That's basically on par with what he has done all season. So it's a very, very high clip. So it just takes a lot of discipline on the back end to know when those vertical switches are coming, who has who, when outside goes in and outside goes out, that they don't cross the streams, or they both look outside, or they both look inside, where they can cap it and not necessarily give Hooker a quick outlet to go with the ball. Because that's one downside to this scheme. You know, it's great when it works, but when you're only running two-man pass patterns and you don't have a check down, or you don't have another concept to the other side of the formation, it puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback to do a lot of damage with his legs. And even though Hendon Hooker has been a good scrambler, when pressures get to him, he has been one of the least apt sack erasers in the SEC. I think only Will Levis and KJ... No, not KJ. I think off top, I think only Will Levis and AJ Swan are their two worst passers and a pressure to sack ratio than Hendon Hooker. So again, it's just being on the same page, keeping everything in front of you, and limiting those hidden yards. Because if you're going to make Tennessee, march down the field with those double-digit drives, every yard counts.
Definitely. So, Clark, let's move this thing forward a little bit for South Carolina fans to Clemson. I know you focus on the SEC, but I imagine you keep an eye on some of the elite teams in the country as well. So,
Impact 300, I think it's part of the job
to
come in with a little bit more perspective than just what the SEC gives out.
So Clark, what I know, obviously, when I say this, I'm not talking about 63 points again being scored by South Carolina. I'm more talking about executing at a somewhat close to the same clip in terms of just getting the football where it's supposed to be, not having as many broken plays like we saw against Florida. How much of what South Carolina did is a one-hit wonder, beautiful night. Everyone would look back on it as like, hey, that was the night everything went perfectly, nearly, versus something that there can be some carryover for them this week to where the offense can do enough to give South Carolina a chance to pull this upset as 2-touchdown underdog at Clemson, obviously.
Well, the one thing, I wouldn't say it's bankable, but the one thing that I would look forward to is at least hitting on a number of deep balls one-on-one. This is not the same Clemson defense. It's still very, very good, but it's more vulnerable as we've seen throughout the season. You know, teams like Florida State have been able to move the ball. Obviously, they have a little bit more well-rounded run game than what South Carolina has shown the whole season. And to be honest, because I know the two-back Wildcat stuff with Joyner was effective, but it is also sporadic. There's basically only three plays they run out of that set. It's outside veer, it's inside zone, and a toss look or something like that off of it. So it's really not a whole lot of breadth there. And if you come in with a deficiency along the front and Clemson, yes, that is something they're still very, very good at. I wouldn't suspect being able to run the ball sideline to sideline or in between the tackles as efficiently or keep them, I guess, off more out of sorts than what Tennessee just did. But I do like the ability of Rattler, if this confidence carries over, to potentially get some wins outside the numbers, whether it is that solo fade RPO that they like so much, or if it is a true overtop post with the safety collapse and just really trying to neutralize and put more pressure on Spencer Rattler being one-dimensional, because we know South Carolina is just not a dangerous team working from behind. Mm-hmm. They're definitely more, I would say, they have more teeth when it's a close game, one possession, or even if they have the lead. And of course, that's when Spencer's confidence is much, much more palpable. And I don't know if it's just because he feels like he puts a lot of pressure on himself when he plays from behind, but that's the assumption is, okay, they're only going to pass, and they've just been not as effective or dangerous in those spots. And when you would think that he would be a little bit more aggressive, he still is a little bit of a check down Charlie in those spots. At least he has been over the course of the season. And despite that conservative approach, the ball still finds its way into harm's way. It still finds itself into harm's way more often than it should. I know certainly aggressiveness will increase, at least tight window aggressiveness, not necessarily pushing the ball downfield aggressiveness, should come in those spots, but it's just an area where he hasn't necessarily taken a leap in that regard.
Clark, a big picture question for you here. There's been obviously a lot of talk all season long about what is South Carolina going to do at offense coordinator moving forward. Let's be honest. Satterfield has taken a ton of heat, ton of grief from this fan base. Big picture, you've charted, I believe, probably every game. What do you think the path is moving forward for them? Can this offense, can this scheme be what it needs to be? Big picture moving forward on a more consistent basis, because obviously we've seen it in spots, but I think the frustration for a lot of fans, Clark, is just that gap between your great days and your solid days versus your just days where the offense doesn't give the team a chance at all.
Yes, the variance of the scheme. You know, pretty good ceiling, very low floor. Generally speaking, you want to get yourself the best chance to be as consistent as possible and as explosive as possible. So, as we were talking about, the actual plays themselves are fine. It's just, is he consistently putting his guys in the best spot? I know it's really tough to find consistency when your offensive line breaks every third play, 2 out of 5 plays. It's really, really tough to get consistency that way. So, I would look into a change. I have not necessarily loved what I've seen from Satterfield, but at the same time, he hasn't been stuck doing the same thing week in, week out. You know, a lot of the concerns, or I guess say some complaints, entering the year was this very static offense. We're just going to line up and run, we're going to run. Not a lot of pre-snap motion. Well, that literally changed after week one. Mm-hmm. They went from one of the lowest total motion rates to something around the league average, and of course, the last week, lots of eye candy to keep the defense off balance. But again, it's just going to hone in on who they can get in to run the perfect thing. Short term, I don't love making an instant change based on what happened over the last month of the season. I would like to look at his reign as a macro look over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Last year's, it has been underwhelming. Sure, there has been bright spots, like you said, but you know, when you are bottom five in success rate, yards per play, broken play rate, yards before contact, it's just really tough to hone in on the silver lining. So if a change is made, you have Beamer, who seems to be more of like a CEO. Obviously, he has the special teams background, defensive background. I don't know if he wants to do the hands-off approach and just like bring in like a guy like Liam Cohn, like Kentucky did last year with Mark Stoops, where it's like, all right, you're just going to be the president of the offense, and I'm just going to let you do your thing. I don't know if it's going to be that, and if it's not going to be that, trust could be a little bit wavering on the early part of the season, spring ball, installing a whole new thing. And I just think just because of Beamer's background, just being a defensive guy, I don't think he's going to rush to make a change. Even though someone like me, I would definitely explore it, but I would not make the change unless I knew the next guy could do a better job, or he has new ideas based on what we have for personnel to bring us to the next level. Because at this point in time, we don't know who's going to be quarterback. We have a decent idea who's going to be back in the backfield, but outside of that, it's going to be wide open. And if you're going to lean on the transfer portal to reload, more power to you, but it's going to put a lot of pressure if you're going to have a new voice in the room trying to, you know, evolve what you already have.
Clark, so I got one more for you here, man. Let's talk more along the lines of the On3 Impact 300, which for those who don't know is sort of the equivalent of taking like the recruiting rankings and moving that forward into college and having an idea of who the most impactful players are in college football. Just from a personnel standpoint, who are some guys that you think you would want to highlight from your perspective from this South Carolina roster? Maybe in terms of some guys you've seen improve or come onto the scene a little bit this year. I mean, you look at a guy like Juice Wells, not really a known commodity. If you really followed college football in the transfer portal, I think there were people that were on to him that were like, man, this kid's going to be good. But if you're a casual fan, you maybe weren't there yet. He has really come on this year. Marshawn Lloyd has taken a huge step forward as far as being a guy who can make plays and make people miss, I think. But what have you seen from this roster from your perspective?
You named two of them. Antoine Wells, he was, we like to say, a draftable grade in the transfer portal. 100% gave him a draftable grade. He was a special playmaker from the slot. You know, he's a little undersized, but the speed translates. And if you can separate, more power to you. So, and then Marshawn Lloyd, you know, he was one of the more muted, blah, forgettable ball carriers in the SEC last year in terms of yards after contact and making guys miss. That was a 180-degree turnaround this year. I know he's been hurt the last month or so, but if memory serves, he's one of the few guys, I think one of the guy. No, I think Chris Rodriguez still qualifies, but I still have to finish charting the rest of the games to be top three in yak average and broken tackle rate. Those are two of the three stable metrics I like to hammer on, which are translatable things. What do you want from a ball carrier? You want to make a guy miss, or you want to take advantage of space? It's all about beating the guy across from you, man. That's football 101. Well, if you can make one guy miss or two guys miss, well, you're helping cover mistakes from your teammates, and that is just immensely valuable. And outside of, I think the other stable metric is basically just your production as a pass catcher in open space, which again translates what can you do when you have the ball in your hands against that one guy. You know what I mean? Well, those things are very translatable to success at the next level. I always hammer on stable metrics. That's why I'm very, very high on Chris Rodriguez at UK. He has been, for 3 years, one of the highest performers in the conference. So for Marshawn Lloyd to have his health back, to get his legs back under him, to be one of the hardest dudes to tackle in the entire SEC has certainly been a surprise for me. I've also really loved Cam Smith in that back end. You know, I always get his last name wrong, how to pronounce it. But the freshman's, yes. He has been a fantastic job. You know, it's not every day an 18-year-old, 19-year-old can come into the SEC and make an instant impact, Harold Perkins aside. But yes, like those are guys who have consistently been on my radar this whole season. And because of Wells' breakout game, he's finally broken back into the top 300. He's been on what I like. We have an outside looking in list. It's usually about 100 to 150 more guys outside the top 300. Wells has been in that tier basically all season long just because the inconsistency at the quarterback position, the inconsistent usage and where he's catching passes in order to make an impact haven't necessarily been there. But after this past weekend, there's no denying that Juice Wells is a playmaker and he would be a very valuable weapon to have back.
Clark, great stuff as always, man. We can't thank you enough. Why don't you tell everybody real quick about what you got going on at secstatcat.com and maybe give yourself a little plug there. Tell them to come sign up.
Yeah, you know, it's a member of the On3 family. It's not as nice and neat as the other websites in the family, but it is information you literally cannot find anywhere else. You know, I have a Pro Football Focus account just to double make sure what I have is not what they have. Well, I can tell you, they do not break down concepts teams run by success rate, yards per attempt, usage. No, sir. Nor do they have the filters where you can see, I want to see only the motion plays, or I only see the 12 personnel plays, or I only want to see what someone's accuracy is targeting the middle of the field. For instance, in this past game, you know, it was a really good idea from South Carolina to try and bring it all back in together and how it's applicable. Hendon Hooker had the second lowest target rate throwing inside the numbers at 36% against South Carolina. 61%. That almost, well, that practically doubled. But again, that's just funneling his eyes inside. And you know what? His accuracy percentage of 61.2 inside the numbers is 10 percentage points lower than his clip outside the numbers. So again, they were just really trying to adjust and manipulate Hooker's process to where he's been less effective. And again, I would not know that information if I didn't have it all charted and set up. So yes, macroly, it could be a little granular for some people, but if you're a degenerate gambler who's just looking for any type of in to manipulate where you're going to bet, if it's -4, -3, oh gosh, they're really strong running this one play, and they're really, you know, soft against it, I might bet on the dog here. So again, there's different applications, but if you're just a big stat nerd, and or if you're just a big college football fan who wants to be a little bit more I guess modern, evolve your fandom beyond just the basic box score and the total yard stats, well, there's no place better that focuses on SEC, I'm biased of course, than SECStatCat.com.
Well, I agree as well, Clark. So I appreciate you, man, as always. Let's do this again sometime, and enjoy your Thanksgiving. Enjoy Rivalry Week too, okay, man? Awesome. That's Clark Brooks. Y'all check him out. SEC Stat Cat, and you can find him on Twitter as well. You saw a Twitter right under his name there. Man, that was good. This was the perfect week to have Clark on, and he delivered as he always does. And we're going to go from Clark Brooks now to Chris Clark, who has decided to join us here. Chris, we haven't really talked South Carolina Clemson much. We've been a little stuck on South Carolina Tennessee, which the head coach at South Carolina, Shane Beamer, said is not allowed. So we got to move along at some point. And we're going to have all day Friday. We've got a 107.5 show that will be noon to 12 this time. Make sure I do my math right.
9 to 12.
Live from Firehouse. Noon to 12. Wow. Okay.
I've learned that one before. Yep. 6041
very short.
Garner's Ferry Road in Columbia. Come out and see us.
Yeah. That'd be a very short show if it was from noon to 12. But all right, 9 to 12. That is Friday. Garner's Ferry Road, Firehouse Subs. We'll be there. Come hang out. And then, of course, we'll have our normal GC Live. By the way, I did confirm today, ClemsonSports.com's Matt Connolly will be joining us for Friday's show to break down the game from the Clemson perspective. We had some people on the Gamecock Central forums, Chris, asking why Matt was not asked to be the Clemson, you know, expert for a 107.5 segment this week. So you can just come on GC Live on Friday and listen to Matt break down the game. I believe we're going to have 5 questions with Matt as well. I actually touched base with him today. He was telling me a little bit about this Clemson team and his thoughts on how this game could go. And I think he offered some insight, but I think he's in belief or in concert with all of us in the belief that how do you, if you're going to frame this game up, how do you sort of take the output from South Carolina's offense against Florida and the output from South Carolina's offense against Tennessee and square those things up? And what carries over to this week and what doesn't? I mean, it's probably one of the more intriguing storylines going into this rivalry game that we've seen in a long time, I think.
I was thinking about this the other day and have not been able to find an answer, so I will put you on the spot and ask you. Do you have any idea, or anybody in the chat, any watchers, listeners, has anyone ever been shut out offensively one week? Or or he scored 6 points, but let's call it an offensive shutout 1 week and literally scored 63 the next week in college football. You would think it's probably happened. Especially,
maybe,
you know, I could see it happening like a Power Five team plays a conference opponent, and then the next week they play like, you know, Northwest Central Arkansas State and win by that. But man, like conference games, that would be another layer to it. Or not conference games, Power Five games. We would have to effort that. I'm going to see if we can figure that out.
Well, I mean, I think the difficult thing there too would be, in this case, the offense did score 0 points against Florida, but from a statistical standpoint, yep, they did score six.
They did score six, yep.
That count, you know, that's not going to count as a shutout.
Yep. You would have to really dive in.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult to sort of figure that out. But, I mean, dude, I dare say there can't be many occasions where you scored six in 1 week and then scored 60-plus the next.
No doubt. And you're right. I mean, it is difficult to square that. And so I think where people are left, whether you're a Clemson fan or media person trying to, you know, make a prediction on this game, or if you're a Gamecock fan, or if you're us, Wes, which team are you going to see? Now, there will be some regression to some version of the mean. I will not be, spoiler alert, I will not be predicting South Carolina to score 63 points or even 50 or even 40-something against Clemson on the road, a really good Clemson defense. So there will be a regression to the mean, but how much? And that is the key question. You know, do we see some better version of the Gamecock offense than we saw for a lot of the season, albeit a scale down from what we saw against Tennessee, where just literally everything went right? Almost. Or do we see the Florida version of the offense, because you're going to be playing a really good defense? And that is the question. We have one game of the elite offensive performance. We have one game of the rock bottom performance. And we have some others that are kind of everywhere in between, I would say, right? I mean, Georgia probably would be the closest thing to the Florida game, I guess you could say. But you have Arkansas, where you pass the ball for 377 yards and you're coming from behind, but you find some points on the road. So there's just the data points are not really there, you know, for South Carolina to be able to accurately predict. We know it's going to be more of a challenge than what they saw at home last week for a lot of reasons. But yeah, it really just kind of makes it tough, you know, to figure out what to expect from this team against Clemson.
Well, I think if you look the last four games, you know, and people say, well, that was against Vandy. Well, that's a little bit better win now than people probably gave it credit for being at the time. And, you know, you look, they played pretty well offensively in that game. You know, the first half is probably the best they have played offensively all year until the Tennessee game happened. So if you look at the last four games, you know, I would put the Missouri game right up there with Florida and Georgia as far as offensive struggles. So two of the last four have been maybe their two best of the year, and two of the last four have been maybe two of their three worst of the year. So, you know, as always, matchups are going to be important, and Clemson, you know, Clemson's such a talented defense. However, I don't, Chris, think that they are quite to the level that they have been as of late. And, you know, are there some things you can take advantage of there? This is not a game. Not only can you not expect, obviously, to score in the 60s, you're not going to have to score in the 60s. I think the question is, can you execute well enough while sort of understanding you're playing a pretty good defense? Execute well enough that you can just keep your defense from not having to go right back out there and stop Clemson. Last year, there was really no threat. Like, Clemson ran the ball at will, and they stopped South Carolina's offense completely in their tracks. So there's no pressure on your opponent that way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to force them to throw the football, Chris. I think both, and by force them, I mean both from your own defensive standpoint, but also from your own offensive standpoint, in terms of keeping the game in the balance as opposed to letting Clemson just sort of enforce their will. They get up by a couple scores early, and then they really feel like there's no reason to put the ball in danger at that point.
Yeah, South Carolina's definitely got to be the aggressor. And so I would go back to the notion that South Carolina very much needs to get off to another fast start in this game and put some pressure on the Tigers. This will be, you know, Clemson's on a 40-game home winning streak, Wes. So, you know, they've been phenomenal at home. Defensively, you cannot get in situations where they're going to be able to tee off on you on third down. And so early down success will be big. I mean, you hit it on the head. Last year, I think South Carolina was down 17-0 at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. South Carolina didn't do much of anything offensively, so there's short fields for Clemson. South Carolina couldn't establish the run offensively. They certainly couldn't stop the run on defense. Will Shipley had a really good game. Phil Maffa, Tigers backup running back, had a really good game as well. We know DJ can carry the football as well, and that's going to be, you know, another added layer and wrinkle here because South Carolina's had some struggles there against mobile quarterbacks for a good portion of the season. But look at the game last season, Wes. There was an interception. South Carolina was on their own 5-yard line and threw an interception. So Clemson took over inside Carolina's 20, and we're limited to a field goal, right? But you're very fortunate in that situation to do that. So, you know, that's the type of things you can't do. Clemson only has one loss this season to Notre Dame, and Notre Dame followed more of that prototypical upset formula. They ran the football. They were able to stop the run, and they benefited from some big plays on special teams. They blocked a punt for a touchdown. They had a 96-yard interception return, and they had another interception that resulted in an extremely short field and a touchdown. So, really, three of their five were either directly off a turnover or directly aided by a turnover. And we know that stopping the run, forcing DJ to be a passer, is going to be a priority for the defense. Easier said than done, though, right? I still get the feeling, though, Wes. You know how we joke every week about the keys to the game? Stop the run, run the ball. Certainly, South Carolina needs to be able to run the ball. But do you get the sense that this is another game where Spencer Rattler is going to have to kind of go off, maybe not six touchdowns or something like that, but isn't that going to be pretty important in this one?
Yeah, and I got a feeling, man, Clemson is not going to sit back the way Tennessee did. Like, they're going to come after Rattler. And, you know, I didn't really – watching it live, I didn't, I guess, notice what Tennessee was doing defensively. When I rewatched the game, then I rewatched the Skycast version of the game, I got a much better sense of it. Kirk Herbstreit made the comment, hey, they play, this is a man coverage defense. And if you look, Carolina was winning the one-on-one battles down the field in man-to-man situations. On the other end, Tennessee was not. I mean, 1-for-9. I think Beamer said 1-for-9 on downfield throws. Clark Brooks, who was just on with us, he had it at 1-for-8. So either way, they only hit one successful deep ball. And, you know, I think on the Carolina end of that, it forced Tennessee to play more zone. And Tennessee played, it wasn't exclusively zone in the second half, but it was close to it. Like, there was a lot of off coverage, a lot of zone defense. And Carolina, to their credit, adjusted to that, went a little bit more to the underneath passing game, moved the chains. You know, the two big throws down that were sort of down the middle of the field on those deep dig routes that Rattler just threw straight dimes on where he stepped up in the pocket. I don't expect that from Clemson. Now, Clemson doesn't have elite defensive backs, I don't think. So there could be some opportunities to win one-on-ones, but I expect them to be a little bit more highly contested, a lot more pressure, bring in five. I expect Clemson to call the game probably a little bit more similar to what South Carolina calls defensively. You're going to man up, bring pressure, go after the quarterback. And we had a question earlier, Chris, about Justin said we played cover zero against Clemson or against Tennessee. No, it was really, it was a lot of just cover one. Like, that's where you're putting one safety up near the line of scrimmage and you're putting one safety deep and you're playing man coverage. I think that allowed South Carolina to simplify a bit if they're trying to do choice routes and switch routes and all this stuff, if it's more just, hey, I got my man, there's not as much room for there to be, you know, issues on who's supposed to get who. And a lot of times teams will play matchup zone type stuff, and there's miscommunication on who's picking up who. Carolina just said, look, we like our three guys in coverage. We're going to go match up. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting, Chris. You got to think they're going to go with a similar approach to this past week as far as their configuration, in my opinion. And as much as I'm sure Carolina fans hate to hear this, Antonio Williams, probably already their best wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt.
He's in the slot.
Yep.
So I'm matching up Cam with Antonio, and I'm telling Cam he thinks he's better than you. Like, I'm making that up, you know? Right. Like, I'm...
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I'm putting that out there.
Yeah.
But, and Clemson's tight ends can hurt you in the passing game as well. Well, guess what? With that configuration, you then have a guy in DQ Smith who is now playing safety, but he's probably going to be matched up quite a bit with those tight ends, and is somebody who's been asked to play man coverage and play tight coverage against wide receivers all year long. So I kind of like that matchup. The real question is, can you do enough to stop the run to make it matter? Because it's very easy to say, oh, just stack the box, stack the box. That's like what people say when you can't stop the run. They're already stacking the box. Like, that's what they do. There's already an extra hat in the box. I don't think you can go cover zero. That's asking for long, deep plays to happen. Even Worry cleans up a lot of plays for you because he's the last line of defense. So, ultimately, there's going to have to be quite a bit. I'm not going to say it. This is a family show. But that thing Cam Smith said in the post game, there's a lot of it's just going to – you're going to have to do that up front, I think.
Yeah, and it's a challenge. It's a completely different type of challenge than last week. You know, Clemson utilizes some tempo, but, you know, Tennessee goes extremely fast, and they have a very unique offense with, you know, all the things we covered, Wes, their splits and types of routes that they're going to run, how they're going to challenge you out on the perimeter and down the field. And Hendon Hooker can run, as we saw in that game. He can buy himself time. He can run in the open field. But this is just a lot different. You know, Clemson's offense is structured in a different way. DJ Uiagalelei's ability to run the football up the middle and on tough runs, you know, third and two, third and one, fourth and one, fourth and two, just being able to power it up in there. And they'll run some RPO stuff where he has the option to keep the football. He can hurt you in the open field. Tackling is going to be big again. So there is that extra element. We're all talking about stopping the run and Will Shipley, Phil Maffa. That's certainly going to be a priority. It has to be a priority for this team. But it does make it a little bit more difficult when you know that they are going to run the quarterback more by design, or they're going to call more RPOs with an option for him to also pull that thing down and keep it instead of handing it off, or instead of throwing a bubble screen or a slant to a receiver. So it makes it more of a challenge. And so no matter how many guys you've got devoted to the run, and USC will put plenty of guys in the box for sure, you still have to make sure that you're winning up front and that you're being really sound in your run fits. Clemson will also stress US. I was watching some of their game against Miami last night from this past week. Just dominated Miami, who's not very good at all. But they get you out on the perimeter a lot. They'll use some tosses. They'll use some motions to try to get you out of sorts. So this will be a big game for the front seven for South Carolina. They have to be very disruptive up front and cause problems in the backfield, and very critical for the linebackers to be able to not get out of position on the perimeter and fit their gaps very well.
Yeah, I think Clemson, they seem to kind of pick and choose when it's going to be a game they run their quarterback. They're going to run him this week. Like, they put Chris so much into not losing this game. Like, you're going to get everything Clemson has and then some. It doesn't matter that they got a championship game coming up, ACC title. None of that matters. They put everything into winning this game. So they're going to run their quarterback. And you look at last year, I'm looking at the box right now, Chris. 30-0 Clemson, obviously. But man, South Carolina, if you told me going into this game that South Carolina held Clemson to 3 for 12 on third down and held them under 100 yards passing in the game, I would have said, I wouldn't have said, oh, South Carolina's going to win. I would have said, oh, they hung in there. But that's, to me, an example of when your offense is just doing nothing. Carolina had 206 yards of total offense. Turned the ball over twice. Clemson did throw an interception early as well, but Carolina didn't do anything with it. So there was no pressure on Clemson whatsoever as far as this game as it progressed. There was no pressure on them to even score. Very just methodical, blah type game. There was nothing really exciting about this game, but they won 30-0. They actually only had 5 more first downs than South Carolina. But yeah, it's because they're getting chunk plays in the running game. Rushed for 265 yards, 6.2 yards per carry. Even time of possession, 31.5 to about 28.5. Not that staggering of a difference. It's just when the opponent doesn't do much of anything on offense, it doesn't force you to do much on offense either. And if you can run the football and you have a guy like Shipley, you have a running quarterback. I mean, they each had 20-yard runs on the first drive of the game. I remember Clemson instantly going down the field, chunk play, touchdown, and you could just feel the air go out of that building. Clark Brooks made a good point earlier. It's a point we've made all season. It's almost become right up there with the stop the run, turnover battle thing. But it's true. Got to find a way to start kind of quick if you're South Carolina. When they start quick, Chris, they are a different football team when they start quick versus when they get down early.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, could go on and on about why that may be, what the theories are, but it is just the reality of it. And you manage this game, I think, differently than you did against Tennessee. I mean, you made a great point last week of you're up 14 on Tennessee. You're basically tied. That's how you have to kind of manage it. You can do that a little bit differently this week, right? Just because Clemson's offense certainly capable of putting up points. Wes, they've only not scored 30 points twice this year. They had 27, I think, against Syracuse, and then the loss to Notre Dame were turnovers and special teams plays doomed them. They scored 14. Other than that, they're 30 points or over every game. And so certainly the evidence shows that with what we've seen from South Carolina's defense this year, it would not be a surprise if Clemson was able to get into that range too. You just, you know, have to try to limit that. But playing complimentary football all game and certainly doing exactly what you said and starting fast, I think is going to be critical for this team. You can't dig yourself a 14-point hole in this game where you're thrown off your game plan. Maybe you're not able to run the ball like you would hope. Clemson can now tee off on you. The crowd's, you know, noon crowd compared to 7, sure, but the crowd's in it. I feel like opposing teams are always going to be able to rush the passer better on the road just because of the snap count. Clemson's got some guys that can really tune you up on the defensive line from a pass rush standpoint. They got depth. They got talent. So it'll be critical for South Carolina to keep them off balance, take the aggression to them, and for sure, you know, start fast. That's something that's very important. Wes, on Will Shipley real quick. Weird, kind of some weird statistics. Will Shipley, when he goes over 100 yards this season, that's been Clemson's closest games. Kind of bizarre. FSU, Syracuse, there might be one more in there. All 6-point wins. Now, maybe that coincides with Shipley had his best performances against some of the best teams, right? Because certainly those point totals were against teams that challenged Clemson the most. Syracuse, pretty good team. Florida State, certainly a good team this year. So maybe there's no real statistical analysis to be had there. If you're South Carolina, you'd definitely rather keep Shipley under 100 yards. Clemson has allowed Wes just one 100-yard rusher this season. That was against Notre Dame. South Carolina has allowed 4 100-yard rushers this season. So you want to keep that number low because obviously you want to make Clemson beat you through the air. You know, if they're beating you downfield with your corners and man coverage, you kind of tip your hat. And that's what we saw last year. They didn't beat South Carolina through the air. They beat them running the football, which is exactly what you knew they were going to do. So, you know, it's coming this year. Easier said than done, but that's a point of execution that they've got to make sure that they get squared away.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I answered your question earlier, but yes, I think Rattler has got to have a day where you can just tell he's found that zone. It doesn't have to be, you know, NBA Jam on fire, hitting everything in a zone, but definitely he's going to have to make some throws and go make some things happen. And South Carolina, again, Gamecock Ryan, I re-brought up the phrase that I stole from Steve Spurrier, you got to give fate a chance. Can you hang in there, Chris? These games have not been particularly competitive between South Carolina and Clemson as of late. So is there a psychological thing there to if you can find a way to hang in early and just watch the confidence on South Carolina's sideline build? You know what? Clemson's not going to be phased. Like if it's a short or if it's a close game, this program has played in so many big games under Dabo Swinney. I don't think they're going to be phased by a close game. But can it affect South Carolina's sideline in terms of confidence continuing to build and grow? Absolutely. So can you hang around? Can you just make this a competition, which is something they have not been able to do in recent years? Even the game they went down there with Jake Bentley and just went off on the passing game, getting Debo Samuel and Keel Pollard and all those guys going, still was not necessarily really a close game because they couldn't stop Clemson at all. So we'll see. And we've got an entire day on Friday to break all this down. In the meantime, I'm going to tell you about our friends at Liberty Tax. You can overcome your taxiety, 803-462-5576. Tax time is right around the corner, and the tax team at Liberty Tax has locations in Irmo, Columbia, and Lexington, 1123 South Lake Drive. That's Lexington, 7467 St. Andrews Road in Irmo, and 551 St. Andrews Road in Columbia, 29210. Give them a call, 803-462-5576. They are there for you year-round, and they can also help you if you own a business with your bank statements, your QuickBooks, your payroll services, your bookkeeping, all that stuff that nobody really wants to have to deal with as a business owner. Again, Chris, like I said, man, we got a full day on Friday to break all this down, to talk about it. Again, we'll be joined by Matt Connolly. That'll be good. He'll have some insight on this and on sort of the Clemson side of things as well. So we're going to get out of here. For Chris, I'm Wes. Thank you all for joining us. Shout out to Clark Brooks. Phenomenal, as always. And thank you all for joining us, and hope everybody has an awesome Thanksgiving. Stuff your face. Don't count calories on Thanksgiving. Go back for seconds. Eat some dessert. Enjoy the day, and we'll see you all on Friday.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.